Blog Talk Radio.
I dedicate this song to recession, depression, and unemployment. This song is for you.
Podcast land. This is a Hotch to Hotch podcast. This is the Messenger Edition. I am Nurse Carmen, and we have co-producers Ken and Ron Hotch. And next we will be having a conversation with the Messenger, Ron Hotch.
Good evening and welcome once again to our podcast. Tonight I want to discuss relationships. A question was asked to me, when will I learn enough about relationships to be able to have them go smoothly? Is there a way to be happy in relationships? Must there be constant challenging? Now, what I'm about to say, I want us to hear what it is that I'm saying. I don't want us to assume, because then we become like everyone else. But just hear what it is that's being said, and then we can learn to apply it and to allow our relationships to blossom and be just what it is that we would like for them to be. And first, I want to tell you that you have nothing to learn about relationships. You only have to demonstrate what you already know. There is a way to be happy in relationships, and that is to use relationships for their intended purpose, not the purpose that we have designed it. Relationships are constantly challenging, constantly calling you to create, express, and experience higher and higher aspects of yourself, grander and grander versions of yourself, even more magnificent versions of yourself. Nowhere can you do this more immediately, impactfully, and immaculately than in relationships. In fact, without relationships, you cannot do it at all. It is only through your relationship with other people, places, and events that you can even exist as a knowable quantity, as an identifiable something in the universe. Remember, absence everything else, you are not. You only are what you are related to another thing that is not. That is how it is in the world of relative, as opposed to the world of absolute, where God resides. Once you clearly understand this, once you deeply grasp it, then you intuitively bless each and every experience, all human encounters, and especially personal human relationships. For you see them as constructive in the highest sense. You see that they can be used, must be used, are being used, whether you want them to be or not, to construct who you really are. that construction can be a magnificent creation of your own conscious design or a strictly happenstance configuration. You can choose to be a person who has resulted simply from what has happened or from what you've chosen to be and do about what has happened. It is in the latter form that creation of self becomes conscious. It is in the second experience that self becomes realized. Bless, therefore, every relationship and hold each as special and formative of who you are and now choose to be. Now, the inquiry has to do with individual human relationships of the romantic sort. And I understand that. So let me address myself specifically and at length to human love relationships, these things which continue to give all of us such trouble. When human relationships fail, relationships never truly fail, except in the strictly human sense that they did not produce what you wanted. They failed because they were entered into for the wrong reason. Wrong, of course, is a relative term, meaning something measured against that which is right, whatever that is. It would be more accurate in our language to say relationships fail change most often when they are entered into for reasons not wholly beneficial or conducive to their survival. Most people enter into relationships with an eye towards what they can get out of them rather than what they can put into them. I have to repeat that. Most people enter into relationships with an eye towards what they can get out of them rather than what they can put into them. The purpose of a relationship is to decide what part of yourself you like to see show up, not what part of another you can capture and hold. There can be only one purpose for relationships and for all of life, to be and to decide who you really are. Mm. It is very romantic to say that you are nothing until that special other comes along, but it is not true. Worse,
right.
it puts an incredible pressure on the other to be all sorts of things he or she is not.
Mm.
Not wanting to let you down, they try very hard to be and do these things until they cannot anymore. They can no longer complete your picture of them. They can no longer fill the role to which they have been assigned. Resentment builds. Anger follows. Finally, in order to save themselves and the relationship, these special others begin to reclaim their real selves, acting more in accordance with who they really are. It is about this time that they say they've really changed. It's about this time that you say they really changed. It is very romantic to say that now that your special other has entered your life, you feel complete. Yet the purpose of relationships is not to have another who might complete you, but to have another with whom you might share your completeness.
Mm.
Here is the paradox of all human relationships. You have no need for a particular other in order for you to experience fully who you are, and without another, you are nothing. This is both the mystery and the wonder, the frustration and the joy of the human experience. It requires deep understanding and total willingness to live within this paradox in a way which makes sense. And I observe that very few people do so. Most of us enter into relationships forming years ripe with anticipation, full of sexual energy, a wide open heart, and a joyful, if eager, soul. Somewhere between 40 and 60, and for most it is sooner rather than later, you've given up on your grandest dream, set aside your highest hopes, and settled for your lowest expectations or nothing at all. The problem is so basic, so simple, yet so tragically misunderstood. Your grandest dream, your highest idea, and your fondest hope has had to do with you, your beloved others, rather than your beloved self. Mm. The test of your relationship has to do with how well the other lived up to your ideas and how well you saw yourself living up to his or hers. Yet, the only true test has to do with how well you lived up to yours. Relationships are sacred because they provide life's grandest opportunities. Indeed, it's only opportunities to create and produce the experience of your highest conceptualization of self. Relationships fail when you see them as life's grandest opportunity to create and produce the experience of your highest conception of another. Let each person in a relationship worry about self, what self is being, doing, and having, what self is wanting, asking, and giving, what self is seeking, creating, experience, and all relationships would magnificently serve their purpose and their participants. Let each person in relationships worry not about the other, but only about self. Now, this seems a strange teaching, for you have been told that in the highest forms of relationships, one worries only about the other. Yet, I tell you this, your focus upon the other, your obsession with the other, is what causes relationships to fail. What is the other being doing? What is the other being having? What is the other saying, wanting, demanding? What is the other thinking, expecting, planning? The master understood that it doesn't matter what the other is being, doing, having, or saying, wanting, demanding. It doesn't matter what the other is thinking, expecting, planning. It only matters what you are being in relationship to that. The most loved person is the person who is self-centered. Now, if you cannot love yourself, you cannot love another. Mm-hmm. Many people make the mistake of seeking love of self through love of another. Of course, they don't realize they are doing this. It is not a conscious effort. It's what's going on in the mind, deep in the mind, and what you call the subconscious. They think, if I can just love another, they will love me. Then I will be lovable, and I can love me. The reverse of this is that so many people hate themselves because they feel there is nothing another who loves them. I'm sorry, because they feel there is not another who loves them. This is a sickness. It's when people are truly lovesick, because the truth is other people do love them. But it doesn't matter. No matter how many people profess their love for them, it is not enough. First, they don't believe you. They think you are trying to manipulate them, trying to get something. Because how could you love them for who they truly are? No, there must be some mistake. You must want something. Now, what do you want? They sit around trying to figure out how anyone could actually love them. So they don't believe you and embark on a campaign to make you prove it. You have to prove that you love them. To do this, they may ask you to start altering your behavior. Secondly, if they finally come to a place where they can believe you love them, they begin at once to worry about how long they can keep your love. So in order to hold on to your love, they start altering their behavior. Thus, two people literally lose themselves in a relationship. They get into the relationship hoping to find themselves, and they lose themselves instead. This losing of the self in a relationship is what caused most of the bitterness in such coupling. Two people join together in a partnership hoping that the whole will be greater than the sum of the parts, only to find that it's less. They feel less than when they were single, less capable, less able, less exciting, less attractive, less joyful, less content. This is because they are less. They've given up most of who they are in order to be and to stay in their relationships. Relationships were never meant to be this way. Yet this is how they are experienced by many people than you would ever know. It is because people has lost touch with the purpose of relationships. When you lose sight of each other as sacred souls on a sacred journey, then you cannot see the purpose, the reason behind all relationships. The soul comes to the body and the body to life for the purpose of evolution. You are evolving, you are becoming, and you are using your relationship with others, with everything, to decide what you are becoming. This is the job you came here to do. This is the joy of creating self, of knowing self, of becoming consciously what you wish to be. It is what it is meant by being self-conscious. You have brought yourself to the relative world so that you might have the tools with which to know and experience who you really are. Who you are is who you create yourself to be in relationships to all the rest of it. Your personal relationships are the most important element in this process. Your personal relationships are therefore holy ground. They have virtually nothing to do with the other. Yet, because they involve another, they have everything to do with the other. This is the divine dichotomy. This is the closed circle. So it is not such a radical teaching to say, blessed are the self-centered, for they shall know God. It might not be a bad goal in your life to know the highest part of yourself and to stay centered in that. Your first relationship, therefore, must be with yourself. You must first learn to honor and cherish and love yourself. You must first see yourself as worthy before you can see another as worthy. You must first see yourself as blessed before you can see another as blessed. You must first know yourself to be holy before you can acknowledge holiness in another. If you put the cart before the horse, as most religions ask you to do, and acknowledge another as holy before you acknowledge yourself, you will one day resent it. If there is one thing none of us can tolerate, it is someone being holier than thou. Yet your religion forces you to call others holier than you. And so you do it for a while, then you crucify them. You have crucified in one way or another all of God's teachers, not just one. And you did so not because they were holier than thou, but because you made them out to be. Many teachers have come and with the same message, not I am holier than thou, but you are as holy as I. This is the message you have not been able to hear. This is the truth you have not been able to accept. And that is why you can never truly, purely fall in love with another. You have never truly, purely fell in love with yourself. And so I tell you this, be now and forever centered upon yourself. Look to see what you are being, doing, and having in any given moment. Not what's going on with another. It is not in the action of another, but in your reaction that your salvation can be found.
So right now, okay.
So I want us to hear what it is that I'm saying, because I don't want us to continue to model so many different things that we do by what it is that they've told us. Because we, now that we are in a conscious state, we are beginning to see things from a different perspective. And this is one of the things that we have to see from a different perspective. Because what happens is, if we don't see it from a different perspective, all the ground that we've gained from coming to the knowledge, we lose it because we fall back into, okay, this is the way a relationship is supposed to be. Or why couldn't I make it work? So something must be wrong. And what's wrong is we are losing touch. As I've said, we've said so many times throughout our podcast that it is about you creating the best you. There will be the day on which you realize and actualize the true meaning of relationships, the true reason for them. It is because you have forgotten this that you react the way you do. But that is all right. This is part of the growth process. It is part of evolution. It is soul work you are up to in relationships. Yet, that is a grand understanding, a grand remembering. Until you remember this, and remember then also how to use relationships as a tool in the creation of self, you must work at the level at which you are, the level of understanding, the level of willingness, the level of remembrance. And so there are things you can do when you react with pain and hurt to what others is being, saying, or doing. The first is to admit honestly to yourself and to others exactly how you are feeling. This many of you are afraid to do because you think it will make you look bad somewhere deep inside of you. You realize that it probably is ridiculous for you to feel that way. It probably is small of you. You are bigger than that, but you can't help it. You still feel that way. There is only one thing you can do. You must honor your feelings. For honoring your feelings means honoring yourself. And you must love your neighbor as you love yourself. How can you ever expect to understand and honor the feelings of another if you cannot honor the feelings within yourself? The first question in any interactive process with another is now, who am I and who do I want to be in relationship to that? Often you do not remember who you are and do not know who you want to be until you try out a few ways of being. That is why honoring your truest feeling is so important. If your first feeling is a negative feeling, simply having the feeling is frequently all that is needed to step away from it. It is when you have the anger, have the upset, have the disgust, have the rage, own the feeling of wanting to hurt back, that you can disown these first feelings as not who you want to be. Now, the master is one who has lived through enough such experiences to know in advance what her final choices are. She does not need to try out anything. She's worn these clothes before and know they do not fit. They are not her. And since the master's life is devoted to the constant realization of self as one knows oneself to be, such ill-fitting feelings would never be entertained. This is why masters are in and perpetual in the face of other of what others might call calamity. A master blesses calamity, for the master knows that from the seeds of disaster and all experiences comes the growth of self. You know, my one of my big things is all things work together for the good.
Yes, yes.
And the master's second life purpose is always growth. For once one has fully self-realized, there is nothing left to accept, be more of that. It is at this stage that one moves from soul work to God's work. For this is what God is up to. I will assume for the purpose of this discussion that you are still up to soul work. You are still seeking to realize, make real, who you truly are. Life that God gave will give you bountiful opportunities to create that. Remember, life is not a process of discovery. Life is a process of creation. You can create who you are over and over again. Indeed, you do every day. As things now stand, you do not always come up with the same answer. However, given an identical outer experience, one day you might choose to be patient, loving, and kind in relationship to it. On day two, you might choose to be angry, ugly, and sad. The master is one who always comes up with the same answer, and that answer is always the highest choice. In this, master is eminently predictable. Conversely, the student is completely unpredictable. One can tell how one is doing on the road to mastery by simply noticing how predictable one makes the highest choice in responding or reacting to any situation. Of course, this throws open the question, what choice is higher? That is a question around which have evolved the philosophies and theologies of man since the beginning of time. If the question truly engages you, you are already on your way to mastery, for it is still true that most people continue to be engaged by another question, although not what is the highest choice, but what is the most profitable, or how can I lose the least? When life is lived from a standpoint of damage control or optimum advantage, the true benefit of life is forfeited. The opportunity is lost. The chance is missed. For a life lived thusly is a life lived from fear. And that life speaks a lie about you. For you are not fear, you are love. Love that needs no protection. Love that cannot be lost. Yet you will never know this in your experience if you continually answer the second question and not the first. For only a person who thinks there is something to gain or to lose asks the second question, and only a person who seeks life in a different way, who sees self as a higher being, who understands that winning or losing is not the test, but only loving or failing to love. Only that person asked the first question. And this is part one of our relationship conversation. I do hope that everyone will tune back in Thursday night so that we can have the conclusion. And at this point, I will turn it over to my co-producer.
Hey, good evening, everyone. We do thank you for listening to the messenger tonight. As we talk about relationships, as we talk about the way in which two or more concepts, objects, or people are connected, or the state of being connected. And we talk about relationships, and we want you to understand your relationship with the Creator. So through this conversation, it is hope that you'll take a look at yourself, and you'll see that your relationship with yourself is one of the most important relationships you should cherish or ever hope to have, because until you have that relationship, it's pretty much impossible to have any other type of relationship. Hey, so
Amen.
Again, we thank you for listening tonight, and we'll talk to you on Thursday. Have a blessed life, everyone. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.